Declare this meeting officially opened and welcome everyone who is here. The one speaking is Honorable Phumzile Ngwenya-Mabila, the Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Rural Development and Land Reform. I will allow Dr. the head of the panelists and also Chairperson of various committees to introduce themselves before we proceed with our meeting. Thank you.
Good morning, honourable members and honourable members of the panel. I'm Rosina Semenya, the Chairperson of Agriculture, Fishery and Forestry.
Good morning, in the world governed by women. Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is, I have a principal here. Where is he? The principal is the whip of the Committee on Water and Sanitation. When he says good morning and the people are quiet, he repeats and he emphatically says, good morning. My name is Lulu Johnson. I'm the chair of Water and Sanitation. Thank you.
Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Vuyoma Hlatsi. I am the chairperson of the Advisory Panel on Land Reform and Agriculture. I am here with my colleagues, and I'm going to request that they also introduce themselves.
Good morning. My name is Bulelwa Mabasa. I'm a panelist in the Advisory Panel for Land Reform. Thank you.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Ruth Hall. I'm a professor at the Institute for Poverty, Land and Agrarian Studies, PLAS, at the University of the Western Cape, and a member of the panel. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good morning. My name is Tata Moachi. I'm a panel member. Thank you.
Thank you very much, honourable members. Dr. Vuyo and her team, let me declare this meeting officially opened and welcome everyone who is here. As various committees who have been invited by the advisory panel to come together to have some discussions, especially on issues related to land, water, and also agriculture. We know that our role as various committees or our role as members of parliament is to oversight over various departments. Secondly, we make sure that there are laws that guide the departments. Thirdly, we have to ensure that there's public participation in all the legislative processes. Through our oversight as the Committee on Land, on Rural Development and Land Reform, we have learned that there are various challenges. And also there are successes with regards to the programs that are related to land reform, such as redistribution, land restitution, and tenure security. Some of the challenges when looking at the program, we're going to discuss them here in this meeting. We're going to share our views and opinion, hoping that coming together will also assist the panel to share the information that we're having as committee members and also the information that the panel has gathered. We are aware that there was also the high-level panel which was appointed by the Speakers Forum, which was headed by the former president, Halima Motlanthe. The panel gave us some findings, makes the presentation on the findings, and also makes some recommendations on the various sectors that they have information that they've gathered from the public through their public participation process. But nevertheless, this is a discussion. I will encourage all members to participate, to raise their views, to raise their opinions. We are aware that members were meeting with departments on a daily basis. There are also issues that we gather from our constituency offices that are related to the issues that we're going to discuss today. Without the waste of time, then I will welcome the advisory panel, which is led by Dr. Vuyo Mahlatsi and her panelists, to give us or to share the information that they are having with us, hoping that we'll engage, our engagement will be fruitful. At the end of the day, we'll make sure that whatever that will be discussed here will be what will be implemented for the benefit of all the South African citizens. Together, let's work together to make the South Africa a better country, and also make sure that people benefit from land reform processes for economic growth and also to alleviate poverty. Thank you very much. Over to you, Dot.
Honourable Chair, thank you so much to the Honourable Chair of Rural Development and Land Reform, Honourable Chair of Water Affairs and Sanitation, Honourable Chair of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. We're really honoured as the panel to be able to co-host what we're calling a roundtable discussion today. I am also recognizing all the honorable members and really, you know, so pleased that we are having this turnout for the meeting today. We know it's a very busy day, but we are really happy that you've managed to prioritize this meeting. We also see the DG of the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, and the DDG of the Department of Environment Affairs, who's also partly assisting us in our secretariat, and also from the Office of the Deputy President, Mr. Siyabonga Hadebe, and from our, as well as Ulitabo. We are also, from our side, coming with a team of resource people, which include Dr. Maureen Tong, who work with us as the panel. Today is a very important meeting, but I need to just clarify a few things before we start. Madam Chair, asizanga la uzothula iripoti ye panel as a whole. We are not here to present a full report of the panel. We are specifically engaged in discussions on various aspects of the work that we do. And one of the key areas, and that was the reason we specifically requested these three committees, is that we are keen to have a discussion with these three committees on three specific areas. One is the area of beneficiary selection and landholding entities. This is something that we believe it is so important in the success or failure as far as land reform is concerned. We've been going around having consultations and discussions with different stakeholders on this topic, but we felt that it is something that we're needing to deal with in this gathering. The area of landholding entities also talks to the issues like the communal property associations, the trusts included, and others. And the reason for that is because we have recognized that at community level, the CPA continue to be a source of erosion of, the structures actually, continuing to be a source of erosion of social capital. The structures are needing a serious relook, in our opinion, but we thought it was important to have this discussion. Another area that requires a discussion today, that we thought it's important to have this meeting before we come back, because we will come back as a panel to Parliament to present our full report if the President allows us after we submit to him. But we thought a very important area as well is the area of land tenure models. The issue of land tenure models for both urban and rural areas is something that we recognized requires attention, urgent attention. We do know that the 1997 white paper on land reform, on land policy in South Africa, refers to the three legs, which is the land restitution, land redistribution, and land tenure. But we do feel that, like with all the other areas, the area of land tenure needed special attention, and it is an area that we just would like to share some of our thoughts around that. The area of water sector has been a serious concern for us because land reform has partly not been successful because of the misalignment with water rights and water access. But we also want to take the discussion further to have a discussion on the structures in the water sector, because we are also looking in terms of to what extent do we learn and align with some of these as we come up with a package in dealing with that. So in summary, what we will be coming back to you to propose as part of our report is to say the current land reform policy is inadequate to address some of the issues from the past, the present, and the future. And the changes that we are experiencing as far as our society is concerned. So part of the legislative proposals that we are putting forward is sort of an overall framework, a national land reform framework that begins to pull together all the issues, assisting in addressing the issues already mentioned, but also accommodating the changes as far as the climate change, amongst other things, but also including the areas of expropriation without compensation. So we feel that at this point, the work that we're working towards is that national land reform framework. But today we are not going to discuss the components of that, but we are preparing you for some of what we believe is what our report will contain. But we are also aware, as far as legislative implications, that there are quite a number of bills in the past and in the immediate that have been presented. Some of them can't, but that have relevance in terms of the work that we are doing. So we want to make sure that we are guided by this meeting from the side of the members of Parliament in terms of what the status is, how they are proceeding, because our work will just deal with the proposals, the policy proposals. The actual work on legislation is going to be done by this House. So it's important for us on some of the key areas to have. So today, we thought, let us just take some aspects of our work and have a discussion on them, and then, you know, as part of the roundtable. We are having, from Friday to Saturday this week, 22nd and 23rd, a colloquium in Johannesburg at St. George Hotel, where we will be discussing the proposals across the board from the work that we are doing. This is the second colloquium. We had one in December last year, and then this is our last, second and last colloquium in the form of the panel as it is constituted at the moment. We also had round tables from the last colloquium because it became very clear that we needed very specific conversations with very specific constituencies. And those constituencies and areas or topics include the discussion that we had with the traditional leaders, the House of Traditional Leaders, on the 14th of January this year. We had the round table on rural land tenure, specifically with the National House of Traditional Leaders, with the traditional leaders from all provinces represented. We move from there to have another session in Johannesburg on the urban land tenure. We moved again to have another session, round table, on land administration, because at the center of our proposal for the national land reform framework bill is the issue of land administration as the fourth leg. Land administration is in a crisis mode in our country, and the meeting that we had was actually very instructive, like all the other roundtables. And what is coming out of these meetings is that the problem of not addressing land tenure in our country is actually not just a disadvantage for particularly the majority people of this country. It is actually the denial of their rights and identity. So as far as that is concerned, if you recognize the fact that 80% of South Africa's population resides in rural areas and townships, and you take it further, that 83% of South Africa's urban population resides on 2% of the land. And with all that, and issues around family title included, and communal title that is not registered, we find ourselves with a third of the population of the country only registered in terms of their rights from a title deed perspective. Two-thirds of the people are not recorded. So you realize that the issue of land reform is broader than just the issue of ownership. There are a lot of issues that we are having to grapple with, because all these issues are at the center of the denial of the majority of the people as far as their land rights, but also beyond that, humanity and identity, social justice together. So what we're sharing with you today is basically some proposal that we believe can assist in guiding the discussion. What we're sharing with you are issues that are emerging from the conversations that we are having. And these conversations continue. We're having conversations with the NGOs that are involved in the land space, together with the Nelson Mandela Foundation. We're having conversations with the banking sector to deal with the issues of bonded land and others. So basically the conversations continue, but the colloquium allows everybody, and we have made a call to the Speaker of the Parliament to allow us the representation by the political parties for Friday the 22nd, and we're really hoping the political parties will attend, because we also would like to have a session where we engage the political parties on their views on Friday the 22nd. We've written that letter to us. We see some of them are responding. So we would like to really request everybody to respond, because we are keen to open that engagement with the political party. So I want to stop at that level, because all I was doing was sort of provide a background as far as how we are approaching with our work. What we're presenting today is basically a part of the areas of our work. We've got 5 work streams that are linked to the land reform that are specifically answering questions. The first one is dealing specifically with the issue of expropriation without compensation, and also focuses on the areas of compensation models. The second one deals with the issues of beneficiary selection, which we'll be discussing today. The third one deals with the land tenure model, which we'll also be sharing today. The fourth one deals with the issue of where the land comes from. It basically is about the public and private sector acquisition strategy that we believe is something as well that we are presenting as our proposal. The next one deals with the area of the link of land reform with agrarian reform and the models from an agrarian perspective. And the fifth one deals with what we call the social aspects of land reform, including youth and women, people with disabilities, but also focusing very strongly on infrastructure and climate change. And we believe that as part of the new land reform framework we're talking about, we need to be strong in the area of the infrastructure. And this is guided, as I conclude, by the amongst international guidelines, but most importantly, the African Union guidelines on land reform. They are very specific in terms of what land reform is about, what the shift is about, and they specifically refer to the shift in land systems in the areas of the property structure, in the areas of land use, as well as infrastructure. So the focus of our work is to make sure that land reform addresses those specific areas. I now hand over to Professor Ruth Hall to make the presentation on the beneficiary selection. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. If it's okay with the members, I think I need to move to where the computer is so that I can do my slides. Excuse me. Good morning, honourable members. Thank you for this opportunity to present the emerging perspectives from our panel to you. We're sharing with you our current thinking. It's based on our consultations, including at a colloquium held in December, as our chair indicated, also on presentations from various government departments and our own research and assessment of experience thus far. I'm going to be focusing on beneficiary selection. Now, the reason why we're starting with this is quite significant. Over the past year or so, a lot of debate across society, and particularly in this House, has focused on the question of land expropriation without compensation, which, of course, is a method of getting the land. But we think that we need to have a prior question, which is, who is it for? Who should be prioritized? Once we know who it's for, then you can go about getting the right land to meet those land needs. So we're wanting to start with the question of beneficiary selection. Now, let's refer to the framework in the Constitution. Section 25.5 in the Property Clause is the constitutional mandate that government must do land redistribution. It says the state must take reasonable legislative and other measures within its available resources to foster conditions which enable citizens to gain access to land on an equitable basis. This is a very far-reaching mandate, and in many respects, both our view and the view of the high-level panel is that the state has failed to deliver on this mandate. We have no legislative or judicial interpretation of Section 25.5. So whereas for restitution, we have the Restitution of Land Rights Act, for tenure, we have the Extension of Security of Tenure Act, we have the Interim Protection of Informal Land Rights Act, we have the Land Reform Labor Tenants Act. For redistribution, we do not have a post-apartheid law. We've never had a law on redistribution since 1994. Nor has this been tested in the courts. Is the government's current land reform program up to scratch in terms of delivering access to land on an equitable basis, as it is required to do in Section 25.5? So our key point here is that the meaning of Section 25.5 has not, in the past 20 years, been interpreted either in law or through the courts. So the vast majority of South Africans are eligible for land reform, right? Disadvantaged citizens who are not state employees and who are over the age of 18. The vast majority of citizens are eligible for land reform, right? But in practice, very few are going to get access to land. Very few have got access to land. Even if we have an expanded land reform program, only a minority of South Africans are going to be getting access to that land. So it's a key issue is who should be prioritized, whose interests, and we'll come to discussing that. Very briefly, if we look back over the past 25 years of the land reform program, 24 years, what I would like to indicate, if you look down the left-hand side, we have the settlement land acquisition grant for the first 5 years. Then we had the land redistribution for agricultural development program for the next 10 years. And starting in 2006 as a pilot, but from 2011 onwards, we've had the proactive land acquisition strategy. So we've had three very distinct policies associated with, firstly, the Mandela period, secondly, the Mbeki period, and thirdly, the Zuma period. So each administration has had a very distinct approach to how to do land redistribution. If we look down the first column then, we see that acquisition has remained market-based throughout. We've had a market-based approach even though it doesn't appear in the Constitution. If we look at the second column, we see that there's been a significant shift, whereas in the first two periods, land reform was about transferring title often to groups of people organized under communal property associations. Since 2011, policy has decided that there will be no longer any transfer of title. Instead, the state is the willing buyer. It's still willing buyer, willing seller, but now the state is the willing buyer, and the state is making available land to beneficiaries on a leasehold basis. Okay? So that's a very important issue that we need to discuss, and I think Bulelwa will pick up on this question of what kind of landholding system do we want, title or leasehold? Thirdly, we see that there's been a very significant change in terms of the class agenda of who should be benefiting from land reform. In the first period, land reform was means-tested in the same way that the housing grant is. You're only eligible if your household income falls below a certain level. It was a pro-poor, targeted program. From 2000 onwards, under President Mbeki, that means test was removed. So it means the poor and the wealthy compete for the same funds, right? So since 2000, it's unclear what is the class agenda of land reform, and we're going to present a little bit of evidence about that. And finally, there's been an important shift, whereas in the first period, land was important for people partly just to have a place to live, for settlement, for small businesses, for multiple livelihoods, including agriculture. In the second and third periods, land redistribution is now only for agriculture, and with a focus on commercial farming. So there's been another important shift. So if you see that, we see that there's a consistent market-based approach, but there's been a change in terms of who's going to benefit, there's been a change in terms of what land uses, and there's a change in terms of the tenure. Now, an important issue to consider is that the department regularly reports to Parliament, but it provides very high-level information that doesn't give the detail that perhaps Parliament needs for its oversight function. Typically, the department provides total expenditure, has it spent its budget? Secondly, how many hectares have we acquired? And thirdly, how many beneficiaries are there? But this actually means that Parliament is not able to provide oversight because you don't know about how the funds have been allocated. Did one farm get given to one person for 100 million while 300 farm workers got a farm for 500,000? We just don't know. You know, if you think about it in the housing context, it would mean like some people get given a mansion, some people get given an RDP house, some people get given nothing. You know, we have no system for oversight in terms of how the funds are spent. We also have no idea about who's getting this land. We don't know. There's no targeting of beneficiaries. There's no clear policy statement about who should benefit. So perhaps we need to think, in addition to policy work, we need to think about a new reporting format that would provide you as parliamentarians with disaggregated delivery data so that you can see how this money is being spent, but also outcomes indicators, because all that the department provides is delivery data. This is what we've delivered. We don't know whether it's lifted people out of poverty. We don't know if people are doing better. We can't track change over time. This is what monitoring and evaluation should be able to tell us. And of course, this is what Treasury looks for when they decide how much money to allocate, because they want to see that this is a good investment and that it's having an effect on poverty and inequality. So overall, we argue that there is a need for better beneficiary targeting. The question of who should be selected of beneficiaries and what they're eligible to get is of central importance. So we know that there are two problems. The high-level panel, chaired by Gelema Motlanthe, as mentioned by the chair of our panel, found that decision-making about who actually gets land through redistribution is opaque. There are no transparent processes. There's no capturing of information. We don't know how much it's the poor, the middle class, the wealthy who are getting land. We just don't know. But in fact, a lot of field-based research has shown that there is evidence of elite capture by the wealthy, by non-farmers, and by the politically connected. So work that I've done with former colleague Professor Tembela Kepe, now University of Rhodes and Toronto, in the Eastern Cape has shown how urban-based businessmen are being given farms ahead of farmers in the communal areas who already have lots of livestock. They're the ones who really, really want land. But then other people are coming from elsewhere with no background in farming and getting given allocations of big farms. So we do need to look at this question. It's really important. We need to solve it in terms of policy. We need to solve it in terms of data gathering and monitoring so that you can also provide your oversight role and assess whether or not government is delivering on Section 25.5. So our argument is that the law is insufficient at present. We have a law from 1993, The Nationalist Party adopted the first land reform initiative in 1993. It passed the Promotion of Land and Assistance Act, which is Act 126 of 1993. All it does is it empowers the minister to use state funds to buy or land or allocate subsidies. It doesn't say how these powers should be used. So it isn't prescriptive, it's permissive. It provides permission, but it doesn't say how those powers should be used. So we're arguing that a land redistribution bill is needed. This was promoted in the high-level panel. The idea is that that land redistribution needs to be guided by clear legal and policy statements, which should say who should benefit, how prioritization should take place across different people, and also how scarce public resources should be rationed. Okay, we're going to get to some proposals about that. So there must be strong criteria for eligibility, prioritization, and selection. We argue that also, not only do we need strong policy and law, but we need to have a baseline survey. We need to know who's coming into the system. When people get land, we need to know who they are, how are they doing, so that so that government can track the change in their livelihoods over time. So what we argue is that there must be longitudinal studies to track change over time to show the benefits of land redistribution to people's livelihoods. If people are getting land and their livelihoods are not improving, we need to know that. We need to have policy interventions. We need to fix the system. So we have some suggestions and look forward to your responses to our proposals. The first is around eligibility. We actually think that the current eligibility criteria are adequate, and we don't propose any changes. So down the left-hand side, we're showing the current situation, and on the right-hand side, we're saying what we are proposing to you for discussion. In terms of prioritization of people and rationing of scarce resources, we do propose that there must be new provisions. Specifically, we're proposing that the budget should be rationed across four beneficiary categories. These are defined in policy. I'm going to show them to you in a moment. In fact, I'll do that now and I'll come back. So in the State Land Lease and Disposal Policy of 2013, four categories are identified. And there are a hierarchy in terms of class. So the first category is households with no or very limited access to land, even for subsistence purposes, including farm dwellers. We propose that 30% of the budget should go to this category. We are concerned that they've been disadvantaged and ignored in a lot of the land reform implementation over the past 10 years. The second category is small-scale farmers who've been farming for subsistence purposes, maybe selling part of their produce on local markets. They might be in communal areas, on commercial farms, commonage land or church land. We also think that small-scale farmers must be prioritized, and we think that we should try to target that around 30% of the budget go to small-scale farmers. Then we have medium-scale commercial farmers who've already been farming commercially at a small scale, but they have the capacity to expand. They're constrained by land, they need more support, but they have the capacity to expand. These are our emerging commercial farmers. We think that 30% of the budget should be allocated in this area. Then we have a fourth category identified in existing policy, which is large-scale or well-established farmers who've been farming at a reasonable commercial scale, but are disadvantaged by location, perhaps other factors. And we think that this should not be the priority for land reform, partly because the private sector has a particular interest in partnering with this category of people. They have their own capital, they're bankable, and the private sector wants to partner with them. In terms of state allocation of resources, we think they should not be the priority. So we're suggesting a rationing of the budget across these four different class levels. Let me go back. So consider that and whether you agree with it or not and what proposals you would make. The third area in which we want to make a proposal is around gender. We find from our research that less than a quarter of all beneficiaries are women, but also women are concentrated in the smaller, poorer projects, not the big, wealthy, flagship projects. So we would estimate that the amount of money being spent on women is far less than 23%, far less. So in fact, we have a program that seems to be supporting primarily better off men. And if we want to change this and if we want to promote gender equality through the land reform process, we need to have policy around that. We are suggesting that at least 50% of beneficiaries should be women and that at least 50% of the budget should be spent on women. It's not just the numbers of women, it's about how much money is going to different people's interests. So that is our proposal around gender. Look forward to your response. Then, of course, bear in mind that the Freedom Charter said the land shall be shared among those who work it. So who works the land? Farm workers, but also farmers in communal areas. So we find that, in fact, these two categories, farm workers and small-scale farmers in communal areas, have not been at the front and center of land reform. So if we want them to be, we need to have policy and mechanisms to ensure that that's the case. There has been no system of to prioritize farm dwellers. We argue that at least 30% of the budget should be spent on farm workers and dwellers. Similarly, with farmers in the communal areas, these are our black farmers who are experienced. Many of them have a lot of capital, particularly in the form of livestock, but are constrained by access, secure access to land. So we think that that should be a priority. And finally, we are very concerned that we are sitting, as I said, with delivery data on hectares, number of beneficiaries, but we don't have a baseline and we don't know what the outcomes are. We need to know who's coming into the system and how land reform is changing their lives. Then we are knowing whether or not we're getting this right. Instead, everybody is walking around with anecdotes about this particular case, that particular case, but we don't actually know what's happening on the ground. Government doesn't know what's happening on the ground. So we think beneficiary selection must be linked to a baseline survey combined with a longitudinal survey to track changes over time, and we need outcomes indicators. For instance, what constitutes success? There is no official definition of what is success. So we need to know how we're going to define that. We also think that we need to reinstate what used to exist, the quality of life survey, on an annual or perhaps every second year, that we need to be going back to the same people and tracking how they're doing over time. So those are some of our proposals. Our questions for debate is, should there be a cap on how much the state spends on any individual? Should there be a limit on how much money an individual can get from government in the form of either land, recap, other support? And this would be to curb elite capture of the public funds that we know are very limited. Should people... This is also an issue that comes from the ground, where lots of people are saying, we want land, but now we see that a farm is bought by government and then somebody we've never seen before arrives from some other district and gets the farm. So should people from the locality be given preference? Should people with farming experience be given preference? And should non-farmers be excluded from acquiring farmland or not? I think that we need to discuss that. Because we also find that, there was interesting finding from research in the Eastern Cape several years ago in the last quality of life survey. The researchers couldn't understand it because they said those farmers who are doing best, who have the highest incomes, have the least farming experience. Those with lots of farming experience are very poor. And we said, well, that's obvious. It's because it's urban business people who are bringing their capital from their urban businesses into the farms. They have no farming experience, but they're wealthy. Yeah? So we do need to discuss that. Also, should there be an equivalent prioritization for urban land reform? We will be discussing that also at another roundtable focusing on urban land reform in Johannesburg tomorrow. There is an exclusion in the eligibility for state employees and their spouses. So this means that whether you are employed by government in any capacity, you are not eligible for land reform. Some people complain, well, you know, I might be a nurse, but my husband wants to get access to land, you know, or a teacher. So perhaps there might be categories of state employees who should be eligible. If they're not directly involved, of course, in the decision-making and if there's no conflict of interest. Fifthly, what should be the tenure model for land redistribution? Here, I think that there's been far too little debate. The change from a transfer of title to a leasehold model went almost without any public debate. But we know that government, over the past 10 years, has been unable to implement the leasehold model. In some research, we looked at 15 case studies, not a single one had a lease. People are sitting on farms for 10 years without a lease. The banks won't talk to them. The Department of Agriculture won't talk to them because they have no tenure security. So the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform has very limited capacity for land administration. So, and every new farm they buy up is more land administration requirement. we clearly have a problem with this leasehold model. So either we need to radically upscale the capacity of the state in terms of land administration, or we need to think of an alternative to leasehold, or perhaps a return to private title. We need to at least have that debate. What should the tenure model be? At present, under the state land lease and disposal policy, the leasehold model is that people can get a long-term lease for 30 years, and they pay rent every year, right? They pay rent, which is a percentage of turnover. 5% of turnover has to go to the state. So bear in mind that it doesn't matter whether the state expropriates without compensation. People are not going to get the land for free. The state is charging people rent. So you're becoming a tenant of the state, and the state is a landlord. We need to think about the implications of that. So we need to think about whether that's right. Also, the land restitution process provides people with private title when they're claiming back their land, but the redistribution process is giving people land on a leasehold basis. So there's actually inequality depending on how you acquire the land. So people have different tenure rights, so there's inconsistency. Sixthly, we're quite concerned that there doesn't seem to be uniformity in terms of how implementation is approached. We think that there should be an operational manual or an implementation manual, so that these policy positions can be operationalized and implement, and officials can come in line. In many cases, officials are very unclear about what they're meant to be doing. They're each doing different things. Policy is unclear. Also, finally, there needs to be a discussion. You know, one way in which beneficiaries are selected is by occupying land. They select themselves. So what should be the policy response to land occupations? In Brazil, the constitution actually says that those people who openly occupy unused land for their own livelihoods and not for profit or for commercial purposes, but just as a place to live and a place to farm, that they're protected by law. Because there's an argument that land has a social function. Land has a social function. It is not merely a commodity. It must be used well. And if there is unused vacant land, then those people are protected. So that is an interesting alternative to the South African perspective that we bring to your attention. Let me wrap up with just a few final comments. Firstly, in terms of, this is also a report back from our colloquium in December. In terms of policy processes for land reform, we're clear that the land question shouldn't be reduced to an agrarian question. The land question, the agrarian question is part of the land question, but some of the land question is not about the agrarian. It's also about people just needing a place to live. Policy review should look at broader rural development issues. Land has different meanings and uses for different people. We're very concerned that the white paper of 1997 is far out of date. It doesn't provide a guide to policy. In fact, we have no overarching land reform policy at present. We have little bits and pieces here and there that have been brought in by different ministers at different times. They're not coherent and consistent. So we actually think that that's a problem. We don't have a clear land reform policy. Government planning needs to be scaled up beyond a farm-by-farm focus. This is a real constraint, and it's unique to South Africa that one farm is bought here, one farm is bought there. And okay, sure. So we need to think about area-based planning. The panel will articulate a vision for agriculture and agrarian reform, in other words, structural transformation. We, of course, are not engaging with Parliament's plan amendment to the Constitution. We're looking at how land reform must be implemented. And we are going to be looking at this question about the institutional configuration and possible ways to deal with institutional silos, particularly between rural development and land reform, the Commission, the Land Claims Court, and DAF and provincial departments of agriculture, because there needs to be better alignment in policy and implementation. Second last slide, Chair. In terms of beneficiary selection, we say redistribution must be demand-led and proactive. And the state should be working in participatory ways with citizens to match demand with supply. In other words, we're looking at local participatory and democratic patterns to engage, particularly between local government and people, with a land needs analysis. We argue that there should be rationing of land and budgets across these different interest groups in terms of beneficiary selection. We are concerned at the pattern of removing or evicting beneficiaries and replacing them with others. We think it's rather important to go back and fix existing projects. And we are wanting to discuss this idea of excluding large-scale commercial farmers from public support, or whether there should be a limit on how much public money should be allocated to anyone, given that they are more able to access private capital. And in terms of the Section 25.5, which says access to land on an equitable basis, we understand equitable basis to mean that those who are poor and landless should get priority. We need to have that clear in law and in policy. If we say equitable access, people who have the greatest needs should be getting priority. Finally, forms of tenure, we are going to have to recognize tenure beyond title deeds. The vast majority of South Africans do not have title deeds. The high-level panel also proposed a land records bill, which is needed. So, for instance, even members of a CPA could register their own property rights. Land administration needs to be recognized as the fourth pillar. I think my colleague Bulelwa will expand on this. But we have found in our consultation that there's no agreement on whether there should be a leasehold model or a transfer of title model, so we'd be interested in your response. We are proposing that a land rights protector, something like the public protector, but a land rights protector could become an ombudsperson to provide oversight of the whole land reform process, including tenure rights violations. And we want to promote land donations, particularly for farm dwellers to upgrade their tenure and labor tenants so that they can become owners, including via promoting subdivisions of large farms. So I will leave it at that. Thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you. I think what we're going to do is to let the next presentation and then we have the discussion. Thank you, Honorable Members. Bulelwa Mabasa, could you kindly...
Okay. Sorry, Chair. Bulelwa was saying that she just is needing to find the right presentation. Perhaps we can take a little bit of discussion. Just to say also on the final slide, just some ideas around next steps, but perhaps we could take a little bit of discussion before, because Bulelwa was not quite ready.
All the presentations must be done. I think as Bulelwa is preparing, and you can just talk to Bulelwa if it's not there yet. Sorry to confuse it that way, but we are having to make all the presentations now. The discussions, I mean, on the communal land tenure particularly, have continued just to build on what is being said. And there are various views as far as the traditional leaders are concerned. And I think the very clear view that is coming across is sort of a mixed tenure model. And these are some of the things that we will be unpacking at the colloquium. And it basically accommodates and builds on the existing a traditional leadership as well as communal property associations, but is very strongly the chiefs of traditional leaders are calling for having their rights, title deeds, per traditional council to make sure that they can, you know, move forward with some of the proposals that are presented for long leases in their communities. So at this stage, the discussions are looking at how the reform of the current traditional system can be effected in a way that accommodates the communal nature, at the same time allows for entrepreneurs within the rural areas to have long leases for development, agriculture, and so on. Otherwise, there's openness in terms of that. The big issue has been around the homestead in terms of ensuring that the sort of joint communal rights are maintained, but allowing for development and grazing rights that allow for entrepreneurship on the other hand. So the whole issue now that the team is working on is to analyze some of these PTOs, permission to occupy, and look at proposals in terms of how those with the record of systems can be promoted in a sense that allows some communities to be bankable, but without necessarily giving title deeds to each and every person, because that view is not very popular. So we are basically engaging with the different views that allow for a mixed model as far as land tenure is concerned. I'm trying to... Bulelo, I think you should start talking now, and then they can worry about your presentation.
Oh, where is it? Is it because I didn't eject it?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Let's do it again.
Yeah, we're connecting it.
Apologies, Honourable Members. What this part of the presentation is going to be dealing with is firstly the takeaway from Ruth's point initially that spoke about Section 25.5 of the Constitution, which has not seen any legislative introduction. As an introduction to... Sorry, can I just have that? Yeah. Thank you. To preface this discussion, I think it's important to link the rural and urban tenure issues. That when we speak about tenure, we cannot treat urban and rural tenure as separate dimensions or as distinct dimensions. That the discussion has to be elevated to look at tenure holistically, but that both tenure models need to be treated differently and have different permutations. So to begin with, when we start talking about urban tenure, I'll speak about rural tenure at the end. Is that urban land has not, up until this stage, taken central stage to the question of land reform. That the land reform program, as we have known it and as has been legislated, has been an issue that has been understood as a farming or agricultural issue. That whilst it is important, obviously, to look at agriculture and rural issues when it comes to land tenure, that we would be remiss if we didn't also have solutions, or rather policy proposals, with regard to how we treat urban land and urban tenure. So the statistic, which is quite conservative at the moment, is that 65% of our population resides in urban areas, and that statistic, if you had to look at a more liberal definition of what constitutes urban land, could also be even towards 85%. Okay, so the proposition here is that urban land reform must vest permanently as an issue of priority, and that this has to include ministries and departments such as human settlements, COSTA, municipalities, agriculture, and mining, as opposed to it just being an issue that concerns rural development and land reform. On the issue of tenure, the statistic that is worrying across the board is that 80% of urban dwellers have legally unrecognizable and non-registrable tenure rights, which is something that the chair also introduced in her introduction. When we also talk about land reform in its holistic manner, we also have to think about spatial planning and spatial disparities that exist. So the idea of land reform currently has kind of been treated as a separate issue from issues of addressing spatial planning and spatial disparities. So we also have a problem in urban tenure where the system still favors the transfer of land and freehold ownership to the exclusion of the majority. So the staggering statistic to think about here is that in urban centers, we have the majority of people that fall as outliers, in other words, outside the systems, because our current legal instruments do not recognize their tenure rights. So with, as Ruth has, my colleague Professor Hall has just said in her introduction, that we have had a disparate and a non-comprehensive system when it comes to how we have legislated and also how the policy has been on tenure, whether we're talking rural or urban. And specifically with restitution, we know, experience has told us that even for land that has been restituted or restored, there isn't a clear system on what the land holdings entities must look like and what type of rights people are entitled to once land has been restored to them. So here on restitution, regarding rural tenure, I'd like to pause and say we've had issues around the land holding entities such as the CPAs, where we know that usually the CPAs are operating on land where there are other forms of governance. For example, chiefs that also govern on the same land, and we also have on the same land where there are also councillors. So on rural land, when it comes to restitution, we have disparities that straddle between CPAs that are not functioning as well as they should, between local councillors whose role is unclear when it comes to restitution, and also when it comes to traditional leadership. So here we will be making, we have had a roundtable discussion with the traditional leadership on, I think it was in January, in the Peter Maritzburg campus of UKZN, where we have also consulted with them about what their views are on issues around land tenure and land holdings when it comes to rural areas. Here, we believe that there's further engagement that has to happen across the board in order to come up with a revitalized land holding system in rural areas. Ruth has also indicated that with redistribution, given the policies that she has stated in her slide that have been implemented by the Department of Rural Affairs, we do not have a clear intention on whether or not, when it comes to rural and urban land with redistribution, is the state looking at providing ownership rights, in other words, the highest form of ownership rights in our current law would be title deeds, or whether or not the state is endorsing leasehold. So here the debate around land tenure for both urban and rural redistribution is that either, you know, the debate has to be elevated to what kind of land tenure system that the government wants to endorse, whether or not we should be looking at only kind of title deed type of freehold ownership, or whether we should be looking at a mixture. Also, again, the research that we have conducted and what we have seen, learnings from regional and international studies, tell us that the issue on freehold title should not be an issue that is seen as the magic bullet that has to be implemented with each and every governance system. The learnings that we've seen, for example, from Mozambique when it comes to land holdings is that communal communities who have had freehold systems imposed on them have actually gone ahead and ignored them, because our tenure systems must speak to the lived realities, including cultural and spiritual forms of land governance systems that communities are used to. So in other words, we will say that communities must be given a level of autonomy and a choice in terms of a labor system, a tenure system that they want to be governed by. So here the suggestion is that we should not have one magic bullet system that should be applied across the board, but rather that communities, especially in communal communities, must be able to opt in and opt out of a landholding system that they already want to be recognized by. On tenure reform, as Ruth has stated, we have various legislation that currently exists, such as the extension of security of tenure legislation and the labor tenants legislation, where similarly questions have to be asked around what tenure system we want to adopt as a tenure system of the future. What we're seeing currently is that labor tenants, or those that are vulnerable communities that are evicted on properties, continue to so be evicted even with the existence of the legislation that seeks to protect them. So another proposition, which is probably something that has not made it to the public fora, is that when we talk about land reform, we should not be excluding issues around Section 26. So in other words, up until this point, we've spoken about land reform only as an issue that resides within Section 25 of the Constitution. The proposition here is that Section 26 is actually an enabling section that must be read together with Section 25. And Section 26 here deals with the state's responsibility to make access to adequate housing. So issues of housing, whether we're talking rural or urban, must now also start being issues that come to the fore when we talk about land reform. And here, obviously, the discussion has to be broader than how we've had it before. So in other words, the discussion doesn't just reside with agriculture or rural development, but that when we talk about issues of housing as a mechanism to achieve land reform, suddenly we have to make sure that municipalities are also people that sit around the table for purposes of enabling land reform, and also including traditional communities and local councillors and so on. And when it comes to the urban side of things, we've said that there are current existing instruments that would assist in land reform. And those current existing instruments find themselves in the National Development Plan and also reside from the Integrated Urban Development Framework, which is aimed at guiding developmental issues of inclusive, resilient, and reliable settlements. So all these are existing instruments which have not formed part of the land reform narrative previously. So just to introduce what those principles would be, and I think they would also have equal application to rural areas as well, as issues around spatial integration, including an access to people to have social and economic services and opportunities, growth, which seeks to harness urban dynamism, and also issues of governance to enhance the capacity of the state. So these are the issues that would have to form part of a solution to what we're looking at achieving for an integrated national land reform program. So when it comes to the emerging ideas, it's that unlike the rural side of things, Ruth has mentioned that we have existing legislation when it comes to the rural debate. We have had the Restitution of Land Rights Act. And what we do need to think about here is an introduction of a redistribution. So if the issues around the fact that the redistribution bill, which you have seen that has been circulated, has to have at its purpose and at its core issues around both rural and urban land reform. So I'm told that we are running a bit short of time, but I think you know, both the presentations that preceded mine and this one are advocating for a redistribution deal that will deal with both rural and urban tenure, but also more importantly issues around a land records bill, which will take into account different forms of landholding institutions, and also a system that will govern how people are recorded. So not just recording people, but also recording what type of tenure they have, and also recording what type of tenure so that they are then able to access all sorts of, you know, related rights, such as access to finance and so on. I think the issues around the financing of land reform, whether we're talking about urban or rural, those are the issues that are not part of the discussion today, but which will be form part of the upcoming roundtable when we do speak to financial institutions. So I think mine will stop here, and then we can take questions on both presentations after this point. Thank you.
We are now ready for discussion, and I would like to be guided by my chair in terms of managing the discussion.
Good morning again, honorable members. The process that will follow is that we are going to allow honorable members to engage with the presentation. We'll engage with the presentation and discussion, but we'll have limit of time. Because, yes, we are going to do that because we are going to budget speech. We are managing time. And all honorable members must have time to make input into the discussions. We are not going to give one honorable member an hour to address us. We don't need addresses, we need input to the discussions. And I'll recognize hands now. And maximum for now, 5 minutes. Honorable Feltana, Honorable Kapa, I wanted to take, because I'm trying to balance, Honorable Wayne. Yourself. No, I'm saying yourself. Matthias, Honorable Matthias, and Honorable Mwabe, Honorable Stain, and then we'll come to Honorable Zwane, Honorable Kaula, and Honorable Chair, Rural Development, and Honorable Nguni, Honorable Ngos, did I see your hand? Yes. Let's follow that, and then Honorable. Yeah, let's do that.
Thank you very much, Chair, for the presentations and the opportunity to engage therewith. My first question is directed at the preamble, and it's simply to know why is the absolute, total, deliberate absence of reference to mining land. You don't refer to it at all. Why have you excluded it? Doesn't appear in any of the presentations. Would like to know why. The next question is directed at the at Professor Hall. No, at Bulelwa. Somewhere you make a statement to the effect that urban land occupation seems to favor the issuing of title deeds and the like. Now what I want to know is there a law that prohibits the issuing of title deeds to rural, township dwellers, where they assume that with your 80% or 65% story, you're referring mainly to the township dwellers? Or is it simply because government has not gone so far as to issue title deeds? Or is there a law that prohibits it? And my next question is, how do you propose enticing the private sector in order for them to participate in the land reform beneficiation process? That's all, sir. Thank you.
Honorable Bata.
Thank you, Chair. I will save your time. First of all, thank you, Chair, for the presentation. I believe it is very rich and very useful and going to provide us with a forum to interact with a lot of things in order to look for solutions. But my question is a simple one. There's always a reference to two terms which are sometimes interchangeable, rural communities and traditional communities. What worries me here is that it doesn't seem to me that when it comes to this social entity, there's a consultation or interaction with the communities. I do sense that somehow the traditional leaders are recognized as traditional representatives of those communities. I'm looking for a situation where I'm convinced that at some stage the communities themselves not represented by those leaders, because I don't think it is correct to think they have always been innocent. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Honorable Chair. On behalf of the Economic Freedom Fighters, we welcome the presentation. And we note some glaring policy weaknesses that have been identified. And particularly policy shifts over the last couple of years. There's been policy shifts, but one thing that the government and the state has been consistent with was on the part of acquisition of land, and acquisition of land throughout, which is the only thing government has been consistent about, is to have a market-led, market-based policy acquisition or policy reform program. Nothing else where government has been consistent except that. And we ask, why has the government been consistent on this preferred method of land reform, which is market-led and market-based? Would have expected that government, having seen that the market-based and led method is untenable, is unworkable, should have changed that, just as legislation and policy has been changing. Would want to know why there's been no change in terms of that approach. At the end of the process, through the the presidential advisory panel is that we have proposed that land reform program in this country cannot be piecemeal. That starts first with the identification of land, acquisition as well as transfer. We need a comprehensive strategy. We should now be sitting with an answer from the panel that says so much of the 122 million hectares of land in this country, from Messina to Cape Town, from Saldanha Bay in the west to KZN, how much of that land is in state hand, how much is in private land and private hand, and so forth. Would want to that at the end of this process, two things would occur: that the parliament must pass a legislation on land redistribution bill, as well as on Agrarian Land Reform Act, to respond exactly to what the panel has identified. That much as government has paid much attention on land of tenure legislation as well as land restitution legislation, government has done nothing about land redistribution. And time is now that we pay absolute attention on land redistribution to respond to the need of land land demand amongst our people. I'll come later, perhaps, if you would allow me.
Thank you, Honorable Matthias. Honorable Ngwabe.
Thank you, Chair. Greetings to the chairpersons, the presenters, the colleagues, and the representatives of the departments, of various departments. Chair, I've got only two questions for clarity on both the presentations. The first one is a presentation by the Prof. In one of the slides, Prof, you spoke about the beneficiaries, the category of beneficiaries, commercial farmers, women, and the age, which was good to me. But I never see anything on youth as beneficiaries, clearly stated there. I understand that in the women category might include young women, but if that is not clearly articulated there, I do not think it can motivate young people to really work the land, because we have that challenge to recruit them to be interested in working the land, because they are the future generation of the land we are talking about. That's the clarity I wanted. But the last one, Chair, on both the presentation, I got a sense that when we speak about land, we speak about land for human settlement, agriculture, which includes farming, but there's nothing that talks about the land for mining, the land that has mineral resources. What happened in that category? Because there might be land where people are not interested to build houses, and it's not good for farming, but they can be sand mining in that particular land, which also goes to privately owned dams, Chairperson. One would want to know, want to hear our presenters commenting on that, because land in most cases as well, it might be for agriculture, human settlement, but for mining as well. I do not believe it's proper that we overlook that particular one. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Stay.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the presenters. I can see that a lot of thought obviously is going into the process, things that a lot of answers needs to still come from this, so I hope at one stage we will get more clarity. Chairperson, I totally agree that we have to have a land redistribution bill that will include all of these thinkings that we have about categories and women and youth and all of that, and I think it's very important that we get some idea of what the discussion is at the end of this process, and I hope this is what we are going to get from the panel that will give us almost a guideline for the beginnings of the redistribution bill. My question is if anyone is busy looking at the issue of our current the land that audit. Yesterday we had a presentation by Public Works on land that was identified via the restitution claims that was already finalized. And in that presentation there was still a section, there were categories of land from different provinces, private land, other land, and then there was a category which was quite a big category of unknown. So that is actually my concern, that we're going to start with the process identifying, but there's so many unknown factors of land lying in someone's hands that we are even not sure of. And I want to say to the EFF, at one stage we got a presentation from rural development that was also kind of disputing the 122 million hectares. So I said to them, we're either adding or losing land somewhere. And that is also a concern to me, because we need to make sure that the people keeping the records are actually, you know, recording correctly, so that we don't lose land or add land somewhere along the way. So, Chairperson, I think also from my side, the baseline outcomes is very important. We don't know, even as I said, we don't know who currently has been beneficiaries of land reform, where they are, where they're situated, are they women, are they youth, are they who they are. So I think for us that is important. And then the issue of subdivisions, I believe it is something that we must discuss very seriously, because for me linked to subdivision is the cost of infrastructure, because if you subdivide, it will mean that we will have to drill boreholes, put in water infrastructure, roads. It's a possibility, it's the way to go, but the cost of that is massive. And is that something that we have to look at the end of the day, because the cost of the infrastructure and many of the farms, I'm just talking about farmland, but many of the farms currently in South Africa and other places in the world is growing exactly because of this issue that when you subdivide land, the infrastructure cost of putting families into places where there's water and other infrastructure is so exorbitant. So it's something that we will have to think of. But thank you for the presentations.
Okay. Honorable Zon.
No, thanks, Chair, and thanks for the opportunity. Let me welcome the presentation. I believe maybe because of time, presenters could not give us all what we expected. I know for a fact that there is a study on the audit of land. Who owns the land, and including the races. I would want to believe that at some point we must get the nitty-gritties in terms of who owns the prime land that has water and so forth, so that as we embark on these processes of redistribution, we are not only redistributing barren land where there is no water and agriculture cannot thrive. As we redistribute, we must be able to say, the Freedom Charter says land shall be shared equally amongst those who work it. So the primeness of the land must also be shared equally. The other issue I want to raise is, I agree with the leasing system as you have presented.
But are we going to have two systems in one country where there are people who are owning land privately and they can do as they please, because this is their land? And in the other system where we are saying we are redistributing, other people are leasing. What is the meaning of redistribution if we have two systems in this one country? Can't we look at the system where we say this is the land in South Africa, we're going to apply one system throughout, because that's to me equity. But if you are going to come here and say we are addressing the imbalances of the past, and those who have been having all the benefits are still going to be left out of the system where we're saying we are redistributing, but the new incomers will actually pay to the state. Mm. I don't think that is fair. We must also look, I didn't hear you touching on the displaced farm workers, because our history will tell you that there are those farm workers who left farms not because they wanted to, but they were forced out of the farms. And in your categories of 30% and so forth, I may have missed that category, and I would want you to look at it. The farm workers, the issue of women, we must encourage it, but we must have an audit as to the current situation when it pertaining the farm workers on the farm. As we speak, are they women? Are they males? Are they youth? So that as we bring this issue of youth and women in the fore, in terms of percentages, we know exactly who are the people who are currently working on the farm. As we embark on this process, I think we'll also deal with the issue of that land that belongs to the state. But my belief is that we must have an overall picture of the land in South Africa. Thank you.
Honorable Kaula. Ngibonge sihlalo. Okwami kuzothi nje ukuhluka kancane, kodwa yikho khona komhlaba. Inkinga yami yokuqala nje ilolu daba lomhlaba, mangizwa la umthulo ohlelo ekhuluma ukuthi kuzobhekeka ukuthi abantu mhlambe mangabe umhlaba osusebenzile mhlambe ubekulinywa noma bekwakhiwa bazokukhokheleka kanjani labo bantu. Bengithi ngizocela uhighlighter la ngoba ukhona uzotolika. Ngithi mina hlalo sami, excuse me, ngemvume yakho, ngoba ngesikhathi obabamkhulu bathile kulomhlaba wokhokho babo ebabo banikwe amakhosi abo nenduna zabo, lomhlaba lobona besuswa bona befuyile benezinkomo bakhile, bathathwa bayotshingwa emaqaqasini zintabeni. Ngangokuthi kuleyo mhlaba babekhona babeneminqwa bebenamathuna laba befihla khona abantu. Kodwa labo bantu even now azange bakhokhelwe. Even manje njengoba ngikuthatha manje ngisiya nawe eNewcastle eMajuba, kusenabafelokazi abakhalayo abasuswa ezindaweni zawo by force, bayotshingwa endaweni la kugcina sebehleli khona isinyovanyovana emkhukhwini. Iy'nkomo zabo nemfuyo yabo ebabephila ngayo yathathwa. uyabona kunendawo lana kuthiwa isejozini ejozini njengoba ngikhuluma nawe nje abantu balapha behlupheka kangaka imfuyo yabo ifa noma eshonelwe yilunga lomndeni engakwazi ukuthi uzongcwaba kanjani basuswe phansi laphaya ebabakhe khona kwafakwa amadama bakaze bakhokhelwe labo bantu inanda dam inandoni eLimpopo isehezemiya dam isengoje bathatha bayofaka enondweni ngikutshela ukuthi mina lento ngiyayizwa nje umhlonishwa ethi i-EFF ithi i-EFF shiswa ukuthi iyaya kubantu iyayibona futhi ukuthi imhlaba ikhona kodwa manje abantu abanayo bona ukuthi bakwazi ukuthola ukuthi baqhubeke ngikwenzele nje example ebhalitho enkambadam kuthiwe ngesizulu kuthi isenkwambasi zonke leza indawo ezimhlaza kothongathi izindawo leza bekwizindawo zabantu abakithi abamnyama abasuswe khona mina bengithi ukuba kuyangame ngoba ngiyeza nalami yathanda uhighlighter lento ye-traditional leader ubuholi bendabuko lobo okuthi mangabe kuplanwa something ethinta abantu ningabafaki noma ningama-involved phakathi abagcina bona nje nibeza ngoba senizobatshela senithathe lezi zinqumo ngoba ibona abazi kabanzi ngomhlaba ngoba umhlaba lo vele bekungokho babo inkosi zibe yinkosi sukade kuwumkulukulukulu kuyaphansi yingakho ngithi mina ngokwami mase singasayishaya le robbers yomhlaba eke siqale kubheka ukuthi abantu basuswa kanjani kambe wona amatayitela laba sekufanele manje ukuthi uthathwe kubona sekukhulunywa ngamatayitela kuthina bona babe nawo namatayitela ngesikhathi bethatha lo mhlaba la ngoba bawuntshontsha kwabona okusela kodwa okay uyabona-ke la uLander First nginama-case amaningi engidila nawo khona umhlaba nje wasemakhosi khona amakhosikhosi ase-waterfall umhlaba kaQwabe nasemandeni kunenkinga ibheka amafa abaqoshwa abaqova uLander First mina I can tell you people ukuthi ilokhu uzana uLander First nawe ungomunye ocindezela ngoba instead ukuthi ubuyisele abantu imihlaba yawo wena uyangena lapha uthathe umhlaba okufanele ngabe uklenywa yilabo uyonika abantu abangekho right nawe uphakathi kule nto yobugebengu namakhomisha khona ngiqonda ukuchaza ukuthi mina nje le nto yenu angiyiboni nempumelelo sathi kogcina khona lokuthi sibuyisele umhlaba thina ngendlela yethu otherwise sibheka amakhosi anefiye nokuthi abantu bathole umhlaba kodwa nothi la makhosi lawa adayisa umhlaba umhlaba vele bayawazi ukuthi lo mhlaba kwangokwakabani yile nto ngisho ngoba le nto sathi nidlala ngesikhathi and abantu bayakwazi ukulima bayimisele ngesikhathi uthathe umhlaba kubone babefuyile belima ukudla kubakudliwa ngisho mina ngikhule ngokudla kwasengadini nikezani abantu umhlaba wabo ngale lokulanda nishama ektha ngakasisize ngalutho ngiyabonga
thank you very much 35 minutes
thank you
Honorable, it's me who's pointing people on it. I've pointed the chair of that side.
Sorry, love. Mina ngikhuluma isiZulu ngine interpreter yami. Ngiqonde lokho standard sami singaxabani. No. Akusetshenzwa kanjalo. Kusho ukuthi phela udifithe ilungelo lami ma unjalo ngifika la ephalamende ngasayina ukuthi uzokhuluma isiZulu
yes
phela kufuna kwazi ukuthi kade ngithinda labo abangasizwa isiZulu
ubana not say they didn't
nanga umuntu otolikayo ngesiZulu otolikayo
mam Khawula no one said we don't hear that lady and the person who said
I don't hear that there is arrangement, there is an interpretation. They are going to respond to the issues.
Wait, my sweetheart. Ukonduthi mina ngikhuluma ngikondela intombi zakhe nawo lapha etafuleni noma ngikhulumela ukuthi abantu bezabani.
Bakuzwile ba.
No, 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 no. Baningi abangazwanga.
No, they've
no, 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 no. Lana eSouth Africa sama language ya 11. I right yami lena.
Okay. Then you are going to we're going to cut your time next time because
no, 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 no.
Listen,
sorry, wait. Kuzoba kuqala ngawe ngifike ngo 2014 la akaze ngithole into esho njalo ilento ekusho umuntu wesifazane uyamanda manje omunye umuntu
wesifazane mamkhawula
ibathi vuma ukuthi umuntu wesifazane uyamanda manje omunye umuntu wesifazane
no don't undermine
why undermine mina
awu undermine
no now try to get a man right here
undermine listen
no 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 mustn't do that
no mom listen what I'm saying to you I'll, you don't want to listen to me but you want me to listen to you. No, no, ma. Akusebenzi kanjalo. No, ma. No, Makaula. The honorable member from DA is raising the hands that he didn't hear. Or you want to speak?
Or I just request, we are wasting a lot of time. It is her right to speak in her language, but it's also my right to understand what she said. So let them interpret to us.
Chair, what I'm saying, Honorable Member, is that you have not indicated that we, because in South Africa, if anybody doesn't understand language, it's indicated. And that's why I was saying those people who must respond to Makaula, they have made that arrangement. If we knew before, we could have actually give the translation in the process of Makaula speaking. So, ma'am, can you translate?
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine will be very short. And I'll follow the record that the Honourable Member had previously prepared. I seem to have a problem about the land issue. I cannot agree with the fact that we have to have a special method of redistributing land to the rightful owners. According to me, land should be returned to the people it belongs to them in the first place. Whether the latest owner had used that land for agriculture or otherwise, that doesn't matter because even our great-grandparents had their livestock, they had houses built on that land, but were forcefully removed without any compensation and had their livestock taken away from them. They had land declared as graveyards but were removed from those areas. In Majuba, even now there is still an outcry, widows there, who were deprived their land. I speak of people near Inanda Dam, Nandoni Dam in Limpopo, Hazelmere Dam, Josini Dam. Under these dams, there were graves. In Engote, people were removed and were thrown in Nondweni area, which is in Mutu, a place they didn't know. In Palito, that land belongs to Kumende clan. I'm speaking of Kwambasi, Kempertown, which is in Tongat. The government is making a joke of Amakhosi and headmen. Whenever they hold meetings, there is no one instance where they are given power to be in control of their land as traditional leaders. Instead, they are only informed about what has been decided about their land. They are just people who cannot take decisions about their land. They have to be mum all the time. Lastly, as I'm speaking, wrong things are happening concerning land redistribution to the rightful owners. Corruption is the order of the day within the department. I'm speaking of the Kwabe area in Mandeni. Land affairs is not doing justice to the people. There's a lot of corruption. I see no progress in this exercise. People are ready for their land. Give it to them. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ma. Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me welcome the presentation and also raise a few issues based on the presentation. When listening at the presentation with regards to landholding entities, only the issue of the CPAs was mentioned. I think the presentation was quiet with regards to the challenges of the trusts. Then, again, it's true that there's no land redistribution bill,
but we're told that the department is busy with it. I think it will present it in the next parliament because we are only left with few days. Then also, what is the view of the panel with regards to the CPA Amendment Act, which has been passed by the National Parliament, in addressing the challenges that you have identified regarding the operations of the CPAs? Professor Ruth Hall, you have mentioned the issue of the removal of beneficiaries being replaced with others. Can you please clarify that one? We have the intergovernmental relations, because you were talking about the role of the municipality with regards to land allocation. You also mentioned the issue of the SPLUMA, the special land use. But my understanding is that the local municipalities can engage the Department of Rural Development if there are any issues which are related to land. Again, when looking at Esther is clear that when a person is being evicted, then the eviction order is being given to the department and to the municipality for that municipality to allocate the land to that evictee. But in that case, it means that the Department of Rural Development, together with the local municipality, must work together to make sure that that is being realized. The expropriation without compensation. When looking at the expropriation without compensation, for instance, in the first place, when talking of the expropriation, the current legislation is saying expropriate for public purpose or public interest, which accommodates both that you can expropriate for land reform processes, either redistribution, restitution, or restitution, or for infrastructural development. If the government wants to build a school or the railway line, that land can be expropriated everywhere, anywhere, when there's a need for that to take place. Then, every citizen, to me, every citizen, every South African citizen has got the right to land. But we have to prioritize. For instance, as we have categorized people who are supposed to be beneficiaries, it's the same as the right to housing. Everyone has got the right to housing, but you have to prioritize. I think one of our colleagues have raised the issue with regards to the youth, because you have mentioned the women, smallholder farmers, when farming for subsistence purposes and all of that. But further to that, I think the single house, what do we call them? Single households. You find that, for instance, women, a woman, yes, female-headed household or the children-headed household, they can also benefit. Because if there's no one to take care of them, you know, if they've got piece of land, they can work that land for them to be able to survive. But when looking at some of the recommendations, are the recommendations that are contained in the high-level panel report, for instance, the issue of the land, yes, land records bill, and I think there were some recommendations that were highlighted there in your recommendations. That are also recommendations that have been made by the high-level panel. I agree that the land audit, the first phase of the land audit has been done, which stipulates clearly who owns what, private, which, how many percent is in the private land, in the state land, and also the unknown, as Honorable Kaula has indicated. But the second one, I think it's about to be concluded, but there was a process on the second audit which was going to categorize the land ownership with regards to nationality, race, and gender. Something, to me, something has been done with regards to land redistribution, as Professor Horst has indicated that there was LEC, there was LRAT, currently it's PLUS. But there are challenges, as she has indicated. I agree with her on some of the issues, challenges with regards to PLUS, that PLUS is being owned by the state. The occupiers are just renting or leasing. The recommendation that I can make on that one, that an audit has to be done, because it seems as if it's not clear how much of that PLUS land are we having and who's occupying it, because there are lease agreements that have been signed, and how much is being paid, is being paid as per the size of the land or how. Regarding the communal areas, it's true, we don't have the formal titles. We've got these RTOs and PTOs. And also that is why it's easy for even in some cases for the traditional authority to enter into agreement with a mining company and take the family land, because the families don't have anything to take that traditional authority to court, because RTO and PTOs, you know, permission to occupy, the right to occupy, they're not legally recognized. Lastly, I will request that we be given the presentation either in a soft or hard copy so that we can go through it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I've noted Honorable Madela, you'll follow. Honorable Madela and Honorable Nkosi, you'll follow. And then you are Ampuru, the last. Honorable Madela.
Thank you very much, Chair. I also wish to express appreciation for the presentations this morning. Chair, just two simple questions, Chair. I think the issue of, in terms of the categories, the issue of youth has been touched. And I want to support that, Chair. I am a bit worried of the fact that disability is not mentioned, Chair. Dr. Mitsulati, you know, in the disability sector, if you are not identified, if you are not named, then you are invisible, then it means you are not catered for. So it's important that component be included, because the ultimate message that the advisory panel is saying, that there's no room for disabled people in the agricultural and land sector. We must be banned from the farms and be confined to the urban areas, and I don't think that is the kind of message that you would wish to portray. Chair, the second thing, also in relation to the categorizations, Chair, with regard to expenditure, I think the whole issue of the mega farms, the issue of the 10%, I have to be relooked at, Chair, because it doesn't make sense. You have a very few mega farms in this country, owned by very, very rich people. We should not make any preparations for them. 10%, say, of 1 billion is still a lot of money, Chair. And in my view, we should, in actual fact, upscale the provisions made for the small-scale farmers. 30%, also, I mean, if you have to distribute 1 billion rand among 250,000 small-scale farmers, it means everyone will get a 10 rand, 100 rand. Pardon me for making that kind of a comparison, but it also doesn't make a sense there, Chair. So I'm saying that categorization needs to be certainly looked at. Chair, then there's another issue that hasn't been raised. I thought Prof would raise it, and that is the issue relating to the size of the farm, Chair. Whether there's any thinking in relation to capping the size, or have certain categories of farm sizes, Chair. So I think those are the few issues I wish to have added, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Madela.
Thank you, Chair. Let me thank as well the panel. My question, Chair, is with regards to what the Professor Hall presentation was based on. I'm not sure whether I heard her correctly when she said the state is buying land for the communities, and the communities are the beneficiaries as groups like the CPAs and the trusts. But at the same time, out of that, the state is handing over the title deeds to those trusts and CPAs. And if, say, the intention, maybe if they could be clear on this one, whether the, as she correctly said, the land belongs to the state as it pays for it from the owners. Is it the intention maybe to have a bridge to say these communities will be holding those title deeds temporarily up until this, maybe if they fail to meet what the state intends with regards to production on the land, then land takes the land back to it and be under control and leave those beneficiaries out. In addition to that, the land that has been bought has been producing mainly, and the communities out there are hoping to get some finances out of the produce from those farms. The fact that the communities are larger than what the farms have been producing, how then is the view of the panel with regards to distribution of finances amongst the beneficiaries of those farms? I thank you. I'm sure I might have put my point, although it might not be clear, I'm not sure. Thank you.
thank you very much, Honorable Nchabele.
Oh, thanks, Chairperson. I didn't see that I was recognized earlier. We welcome the input by the committee chairperson, but my worry here is the hatred in this country is going to bury us alive. And the problem here is not actually the laws that we pass in parliament, but I think is the population, how we relate to one another, those who own land and the landless, those who work on the farms and the farm owners. Many farmers believe in protection of human rights, but they don't actually see workers' rights as human rights. They see workers as just people who must just come and work, and when they are tired, you kick them out of the land. There are instances, sometimes, this issue of hatred, Chairperson, that in Mpumalanga, there's talk about this farmer who has water rights, but the farmer just uphill decides to block the water to this person. And the water board every month wants payment from him because according to the lease, the rights that the property that he has, he's got water rights, and the board knows that he's getting water, while in essence the person is not getting that water. And what I hear is that when the committee, I think it's agriculture, went to meet with the water board to discuss the matter, members of the water board there was no African or a black person or any other person except white people who are sitting on the majority of them, if not all of them, were sitting on the board. There will be many other issues related to this. I'm just making an example about this one, that even the that are committed by those who have do not end up in the courts. There's a lady in my village, she was a girl when she was shot at and nearly killed by a farmer in Marble Hall, mistaken for a baboon. The farmer got acquitted because they could not take the bullet out of her skull, because taking the bullet out of the skull will mean her death. So because you cannot take the slug from her skull, the farmer got scot-free.
At me so that you can see your minutes, as I'm saying. I'm showing that you are left with two.
Oh, I thought you were saying peace.
No, no, that's why I could see that. No, I'm just saying 2 minutes.
Yeah. The Jefferson, and that the police also, they are, I'll say that the judiciary, generally, they are very soft when it comes to, you know, people of a lesser god who get killed on the farm or evicted. Farmers evict people without any court order, nothing. You know, it's high time that labor inspectors also should, you know, add value to this quest for human rights on the farms and on the land. Thanks, Jefferson.
Honorable, you'll indicate your name as you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Nosili Vere Winifred Makahla. Chairperson, let me welcome the reports. And I'm also covered by the categorization of the beneficiaries here. I won't mention it again. Chairperson, my colleagues have mentioned a wide range of human needs for land. But let us not forget to mention the natural resources as well as the environmental issues. And lastly, Chairperson, Honorable Ncube and Honorable Kavla covered me in the issues of consultation. Because Chairperson, the very rural areas are used to be left behind in consultation. That was what Honorable Kaula was emphasizing. The rural people are always left behind. Thank you very much.
Honorable Mbabamba. Yes.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'd like to say that the panel, or maybe I should talk to Dr. Maslati and the team members that the President has chosen. I would really like you guys to try and be as nonpartisan as possible. I know that possibly if this was a DA government, we would be having a DA chairperson heading up this very important panel. Not this panel, but I mean the actual group on land reform that is advising the President. I would really like you guys to be as nonpartisan as possible, because this, what you have been tasked with is something that is very important for South Africa. And I would really like us not to politicize it as much as possible. I'm not saying who's right, I'm not saying who's wrong, but in the next term, you will try as best you can. I know you have to, you know, but you must try as best you can. I'd also like you guys to avoid top-down solutions. You know, I've been working with this land reform since way back, 1995. I was there with SLEG, I was there with LRED, I was there with PLUS in the land bank, so I know what happened. And there were many mistakes that we made. And most of the mistakes that we made was throwing the baby out with the bathwater. We didn't look at the mistakes that we made and try and correct them as the years went by. So what I'd like to see you guys doing is actually looking over the 25 years, what are the mistakes that we have made as South Africans? Now I'm talking as a South African. What are the mistakes that we have made?
And in terms of your solutions that you come up with, Dr. Hall, in terms of your solutions that you come up with, can you please show us what they are mitigating in terms of the mistakes that have happened in the past? And I think one of the mistakes that have happened was that we didn't really look at the needs of the people. We had top-down solutions. And sometimes as commissions and all of that, when we do look at the needs of the people, we tend to politicize things. Because even with the Constitutional Review Committee, you know, each and every party was trying to push their own agenda. And I think, Nyani, if you're a South African these days who really cares about this country, you will just put your political agenda aside and really try to do the job as you have been tasked with. I've already said that the solutions must also be mitigants for past mistakes. But again, in terms of the mistakes that we've made over the past 25 years, there have been good things that we've done. Let's not try and fix those. Let's not try and fix what is not broken. Let us work with it. And in terms of not fixing what is not broken, I'm looking at the rural tenure, what people have as Lalini right now with chiefs. And when I talk chiefs, I'm talking real chiefs, not what Kadima Mutlante called 10-point dictators. The real chiefs that are there, that system used to work. Can we find some way around that of actually finding some kind of formal recognition of that? I know that Ruth Hall has spoken a lot around that. I think one of your solutions must come on that as well. And then in terms of nationalization or this idea of having different kinds of ownership of the land, please don't take us back to 99-year leases of the past. My grandmother died without having had ownership of her house. And as a black person, I want to own my own land. I've never had the opportunity to own my own land. If you want to nationalize and have government owning the land, let's do that 200 years from now. But not having come out of our history, I want to own my own land. Be it a farm, be it residential, be it whatever. But give me the papers for my own land so that at least I can die having said, Nam jikendana umhlaba obhaliswe ngami. Just like the vote. That thing is just like the vote. 1994, we all wanted to go and vote because we had never had that privilege or that pleasure to actually vote in the past. So why are we going to deny our people ownership of land? Thank you. I'll leave it at that. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mguni.
Thank you very much. And thank you, Dr. Vuyo Mahlatsi, and the presenters. With the presentation, which I also welcome. You know, we still have to have equity and the redress in terms of the allocation of water. From the past experience and from what we have seen over when we were doing the oversight visits with the Committee on Water and Sanitation, we have noted on those who got the land through this land acquisition program that the most of these farmers, more especially the majority of the country, the blacks, are still having the problem of this water rights. And one member has indicated there on how these people suffer in terms of these water rights. You find the land has been given, has been acquired, but the farmer does not have the right. I was hoping that on your presentation there was going to be something on water allocation and reform strategy, which will talk about this allocation. I think there was a strategy that was there, I think it was 2008, where there were distribution rights from 2014 up until 2024. Hence, we speak. If we speak about the issue of this land distribution bill that is proposed, that you propose, I think that must get must form part of the strategy for water acquisition. On the issue of these categories, I think we have mentioned all the disabled, but you mentioned one. You say non-farmers. There was this queuing question which you asked whether non-farmers should be excluded or included in this distribution of land. You know, history, scientific studies have indicated that even a non-farmer can be transformed to be a farmer. You see, we're even seeing this today, that one is a farmer, the other has not been a farmer, they collaborate, then this one ends up being a commercial, a very powerful farmer. So my take is that on that queuing question, let non-farmers be included in the acquisition of this. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Mguni, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I'm seated here having listened to all the submissions. Thanks for that. But equally engaging myself in my own meeting as to what is it exactly that we want to achieve? What is the purpose of this exercise? Granted, the roundtable discussion, I would imagine it is expected to get some ideas, inputs from members of parliament, having to contribute to a bigger discussion on the whole issue related to land expropriation of land without compensation. But still that question must be responded to so that we don't sit here as policymakers and be asking questions. Rather, we put up concrete proposals going forward. Again, it begs the same question as to what is it exactly that we want to achieve out of this exercise here. I like the subject on the class question in such a discussion or debate as to exactly what is it that we want to achieve in this whole, you know, exercise of expropriation without compensation, and factoring there that class question becomes quite critical. Whether we want to continue or rather build a new peasant in South Africa, granted with the evolution wherein we now have a seriously industrialized country, we are able to go back to that peasant and that type of new peasant and these characteristics, what would that be? The question also I would be having for myself, something that we really need to take into serious cognizance going forward. I like the point raised about the church land. I don't know what we mean by that. My only assumption is that this is land that churches acquire, and it's so easy for churches, and especially given all what we have this day and age, anyone wanting to make money, just, you know, a question is asked by one, you know, person in Johannesburg without being xenophobic from Nigeria, the other one is in London, the one in Johannesburg, hey, I'm hungry, hey, go blind. And the one in London responds by saying, in South Africa, just open up a church, man. You'll be rich. But you also have a very easy way of acquiring land as a church. And I'm told it costs you on any value, market value of that land, 1%. If the land is worth about 4 million rand, you easily get it for 40,000 rand, I'm told. The last point talks to water, which I thought there was still to be somebody making an input on that. What Comrade Alec is saying is real. The unfortunate part is that you have a legislation that was initiated, expected to bring equity in terms of distribution of our water resource in this country. Unfortunately, it took so long, we are now at the end of the term. What that legislation would have also done, would have also done away with your 1956 what we call this Water Act. As we speak today, your riparian rights are still very much active, to a point where, you know, not only in Mpumalanga, in Limpopo, there at home, this land reform program having gotten through, here are these black farmers. Now, these farmers, before water would have been coming through, suddenly, and then you ask your department officials, because suddenly the water has since been diverted elsewhere. And clearly that farmer, can't remember, is part of those, part of those ZZ2. It's linked to that. And the water is now diverted elsewhere. And the new owners are struggling to make ends meet. So now these are the, but in broad terms, what you are dealing with here is that your new owners of the land who are black, in fact, let me be concrete, who are African, right? As things stand now, they are not going to succeed with any of these land reform programs we talk about, for as long as the issue of water is not resolved. That's what we've been battling with. Unfortunately, we've had a department which has been very intransigent to a point where we couldn't move on this one. Otherwise, we could have been far. Land is transferred by Basco Kamur, your African fellow who gets access to that land. Water is traded separately. That's what we're going through. The last question, sorry, Chair, I wanted to raise just as one simple question, so that we're very specific when we talk about black. It says non-state employees, talks about black people. So that we are also very specific as to what we mean by black, so that there's no ambiguity.
To the commissioners to respond, but before I do that, I must add two things from me, because I was listening to members of agriculture in particular. They've not touched those things, which I think they need to be recorded. the issue that is raised by Honorable Nchabele is very critical for the achievement of redistribution or land reform of the nation building, because you have two prongs on the issues. You have this hatred that is talking about, you have government that is actually redistributing lands to owners who in the process sell, they don't see the value of that asset. I think the nation building is very key for the achievement of the land reform. Two, agreeing with Honorable Member Mbamba on the learning of the mistakes, because if you look at some of the programs, they are very good programs, but when they were implemented wrongfully so. Like your PLUS was meant to buy farms for farmers, for smallholder farmers. But what happened was that Department of Rural Development bought land for farmers, for smallholder farmers. They bought just ordinary land where even in some instances, even the farm that was equipped with water and infrastructure, those things were removed. And then black farmers given land without any infrastructure, which is most of the land that is not utilized as we speak. So I think that's something else, because I know that the president has made pronouncement of land allocation, land of government that will be immediately distributed. And just request is that land for agriculture should be redistributed to agriculture, those that are farming, not because in the process of land reform, we should not lose land for agriculture for other things, and we forget that we need food in the country. That's the other thing. And the other issue is the capping of ownership, because that thing would help even the foreigners, because which is not been spoken, there are a lot of foreigners who own our land, and that is something that needs to be engaged on and look, and some of the lands that were meant for agriculture are now being transformed into animal game reserves, a lot of them, which for me is absence of that legislation of Land Administration Act. I think that's something that as we implement now, some of the things should not fall away from the system. We should actually, land for agriculture must be taken, given to farms, because most of this land, government land, are leased to farmers. There should not be a change of hands. In municipalities, for instance, they are leasing land to smallholder farmers. If it's not managed properly, because it's supposed to be redistributed, it will go to another hand. And or can be in the process of now and the changing of the Constitution and the Act, they build a mall there. The farm will be redemarcated and build a mall in the process. So we need to, as we engage on discussion, other people are implementing something else or are planning to do other things on the ground. So we should make sure that as we deal with that, we protect land for agriculture, including land, mining land against agriculture. We should balance and make sure that we don't lose land for agriculture. I must give it to you to respond. Or just to talk about what honourable members have said.
Thanks so much. We're going to ask the panelists to respond to the various questions, and then I'll give a summary after they respond. I just want to specifically deal with the issue of consultation as they are preparing themselves. The issue of consultation, honourable members, is actually a very sensitive issue for us. We don't have enough time, but we have tried. We've tried to, through the colloquia, to make sure that we bring various stakeholders from the communities directly, as well as from structures that exist. So you will bring in people who are, you know, CPA, from the CPAs, you will bring in the traditional leaders and the consultation, and you will bring in NGOs and CBOs that operate from there. We've had engagements with the church leaders on the other side through structures as well, like the South African Council of Churches. So basically, the attempt has really, in my opinion, been commendable, because we specifically are avoiding to make those decisions on behalf of people, but to make sure that we are consulting directly with the various groupings. So from a rural perspective, we've been as sensitive as we have been in the urban perspective to make sure that we don't just talk to the chiefs. And in some cases, consultations took place, like in the hearings, like in the land panel, and we looked at the gaps in those consultative processes. And then we would realize that this report did not address properly this particular constituency. And then we would make sure that we delve within that area. And those are some of the issues, and that was one of the reasons we had to meet directly with the traditional leaders, because, you know, there was that concern that from the high-level panel they were not directly engaged. But it is not just at that level, it's across the board. So we meet with rural communities outside of the chiefs, and we also meet with the traditional leaders. We meet with women. Actually, one of our engagement was with women formations in both rural and urban areas. So basically, it's cutting across various areas to make sure that we're not just taking a view that comes from one area or grouping, but we make sure that we take views and we meet with farmers as well across the board. So generally speaking, you know, we have tried our best within the limited time and resources that we have, and we are very comfortable that the proposals that will be coming through will continue to be tested and would have been tested across the board. So it does not sort of take a particular view from only one area. The other thing is that on the mining land, let me just explain. Our mandate and terms of reference are actually distinct from the expropriation without compensation process of Parliament. They focus on the how. And the how is basically we've been specifically given the responsibility to look at land reform from a rural and urban perspective, to also look at land reform and spatial transformation, and also look at land reform and agriculture. So when it comes to this, the issues of land use are part and parcel of the mandate from a spatial perspective. So mining in a form of land use is something that we are tackling from that perspective. But from a land ownership, and that's one point, when part of our engagement has included mining houses. We have engaged with the Minerals Council, what used to be called the Chamber of Mines. And part of our engagement with them is looking for land. So basically, the issue of where this land is to come from, we have looked at them as part of the landowners, with the churches, with the mining houses, with some of the corporates and property owners as well. But there is a point that my colleague Bulelwa also wants to emphasize around this, that as far as the land issue and mining and minerals, they are different. It's a different, because there is a different dispensation of licensing from a legal perspective as opposed to the ownership. So in terms of the structure of that, there's a clear piece of legislation that governs that. So I'm just highlighting the different levels in terms of how we've engaged with that. We're not excluding it from a land use perspective, but and also in terms of where ownership of land by the mining houses at that level. But at a different level going forward, I would let Bulelwa talk to that as she deals with the other issues.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think in relation to minerals, it's important to emphasize the fact that our dispensation is that minerals are licensed by the state to mineral holders. And to hold minerals as a licensee, you don't need to be a landowner. So when we talk about mining houses owning land, it is true that there are mining houses that do, but it is also important to realize and understand that one does not need to be a landowner to have mineral rights. So in other words, we have seen communities that have been restored with land that then license out or rather that get compensation for the use of those minerals on their land by the mining houses. So this is just an issue that we need to understand, and the legislation that governs that is the Mineral and Petroleum Development Resources Act. That's the MPRDA. And then in relation to some of the other questions that were asked, there was one around title deeds, whether or not there's any law that prohibits the ownership, the giving of title deeds. The simple answer to that is that there is no law that prohibits it. The nuanced issue around title deeds, especially in traditionally black townships, is that the issue of the typical township home is that that issue touches on succession laws in our country. It also touches on the fact that the cultural and social lived experience of people is that most black people do not recognize one, an individual, as a title landholder. So there has to be a caution around simply dishing out title deeds that can actually foster even more conflict in existing households. So there is a caution that says we have to have a policy that is clear, that is coherent when it comes to the traditionally black townships around the township home, which allows the communal structure to have recognition for that home that is might not necessarily be an individual, because you can understand that within that cultural setup that works on primogeniture or whether a patriarchal system, usually the head of the household who is male is regarded as the head of the household who, if we just dish our title deeds willy-nilly, you will then end up with a situation where one person ends up disposing of the home, undermining other family members that have the equal rights. So this is what we are talking about when we talk about the Land Records Bill, where we have a system that recognizes all the interested parties in relation to that household who would then be covered by that type of legal instrument in the issuing of title deeds. There's a question around how do we entice the public, the private sector to participate in land reform. Having engaged
with... black sheep. Ngelinye ilanga, not today, kuyofuna-ke sibheke ukuthi ngabe kusafuneka yini sekuyintando eningi sabe khona indawo kuthiwa ama-black sheep. Ngiyabonga.
Black townships. Okay.
Yes, ngisho right. Noma kungabe u-black township, ngiyofuna lelo gama ke silibheke ukuthi livumelekile sesuka i-democracy. Ngiyabonga.
Ngiyabonga ma. Igama engilikhulumile is to say former. So it's in recognition of the fact that that is not the current setup. That's why I use the word known as or former. Ngiyabonga, ma'am. The issue around how to entice the private sector, it's a very important question. We are already seeing, I'm not answering the question wearing a hat as a practitioner, where there are huge projects that have to do with land development. We are seeing the inability of municipalities to provide bulk infrastructure because of financial and economic realities. We are now starting to also see the private sector taking the role of paying for bulk infrastructure in the process of land development. And this is where it's an important question and an important consideration to say land reform solutions are not just going to come from government or parliament, but that the interaction between the public and private sector becomes crucial. And I think that is also issues that touch, that issue is related to the issue, the question asked around subdivision, that within that bulk infrastructure is a capital intensive issue that cannot just be dealt with by government. I think on the questions that I wanted to ask as around the question, why did we not speak about CPAs? I think when we spoke about trust, that the questions in relation to trust and the challenges around trust are also including the issues that we've had with trust as well. So both governing structures as we have it in terms of legislation have proven to be difficult. In fact, the trust system on its own it has been archaic, whether we're even talking about land reform or not. So the reforms that we're talking about around CPAs equally would also involve the reforms on the trust system as well. I think I can move on to Ruth if there are questions that were specific to her, because I also understand that we're not going to necessarily be able to touch on each and every question.
Thank you, Chair. And thanks to the Honourable Members for very interesting and wide-ranging comments and questions. Firstly, I want to say that we've taken detailed notes, so even if we're not answering your questions, they've been noted, the points have been noted. The first thing I want to reflect on is that it seems like there has been quite a positive response from this House in relation to the idea that we should prioritise, we should categorise, we need to redirect and clarify purpose and the targets of our land reform process. I hear from Honourable Ngabe and Madela the criticisms that we were silent on youth and disability. Those are noted. I think that Honourable Gata asked an important question about consultation with rural communities. I think that it's important that we keep track of all the legislative implications of the proposals that we're making, and this is one of them, which is that we have the Interim Protection of Informal Land Rights Act, IPILRA of 1996. It's very weak. It was meant to just be a holding mechanism. It's just been re-promulgated every year. So we need a stronger and permanent version of IPILRA. This is exactly what was promoted by the high-level panel. Secondly, Honourable Matthias from the EFF was asking about these glaring weaknesses, particularly the policy shifts. And while policy has been shifting, the state has been consistent on market-based acquisition. And the question is why? Now, I think that's a big question. But in very brief, this is a policy choice. Willing buyer, willing seller was never in the Constitution. The property clause presumed that land reform would proceed via expropriation, at least in part. So it's a policy choice that the state has chosen not to use its legislative and constitutional powers to drive acquisition. So I'm very pleased that you argue that there should be a comprehensive strategy for land identification and acquisition. We are working on that. So in addition to a permanent version of IPILRA, we see the need for a land redistribution bill and a land records bill. And I think that these work very much in tandem with one another, because the land redistribution bill is about promoting equitable access, and the land records bill is about promoting equitable tenure and securing tenure. So access and tenure have to go together. So I think that those are two very significant implications of our work. In addition, several people were concerned that we don't know who owns what in South Africa and the inadequacy of the land audit. We had a land audit in 2013, state land audit, another one in 2017, plus AgriSA did their own one. All of them are flawed and inaccurate and incomplete. So we clearly still have far to go to find out what should be done. I think that our panel should be looking to not only promote the idea of a new white paper, we should be promoting discussion or an investigation or inquiry around land tax, around strengthening the land audit, around clarifying the processes for subdivision, which are all essential. Several of the issues that were raised are actually addressed in the draft regulation of land holdings bill, including the ceiling on how much land anyone can hold, the idea of land ceilings, also the self-declaration of nationality, race and gender, and also a limitation on foreign ownership. So, you know, I mean, this is going to come back to the next parliament, the regulation of land holdings bill. I mean, we can argue about whether land ceilings actually are effective and whether they're the appropriate thing, because, of course, a small farm in the Northern Cape is different from a small farm in the Wineland, so we must really think carefully about that. But I do think that the regulation of land holdings bill needs to be heavily debated. At the same time, I think there are contradictions with the Preservation and Development of Agricultural Land Framework Bill, PDALF Bill, okay, which aims to provide a floor rather than a ceiling. So we have the two departments having different ideas about whether we're trying to keep big farms intact or subdivide them into smaller farms. We actually don't have clarity around that. A few final comments. I think that just to respond to, I think it was Nkosi Qebakulu around state purchase. Just to be clear, the state used to provide subsidies for people to acquire private title, title that can't be revoked. And then the change in 2011 under former Minister Nkwinti was that there would be a shift towards the state buying land and leasing it out, initially for 3 years. Now we have the state land lease and disposal policy of 2013, which extends that to 30 years. So after those 30 years, people can renew if they've been paying rent to the state for another 20 years. After 50 years of paying rent to the state, people are eligible to apply for transfer of title only after 50 years. So, you know, we really need to think about this. So there's no such thing as holding titles temporarily. Rather, it's about leasehold that might or might not become a title later. But I think that we need to also be asking the question of what is the purpose of the state trying to extract rent? Because sometimes people have very, very small profits, and now they have to pay it to the state. You know, what is the purpose? Is this really sensible if we want people to succeed? And in terms of the larger fiscus, it's a very small amount of money. So I think that I'm going to just pretty much leave it at that, just to say thank you, Honourable Johnson, for your view about actually we need to also respond to the expropriation without compensation question. We need to address the church land. Churches are big landowners. You know, under colonialism and apartheid, many people acquired land, but because they weren't legally allowed to own it, the church owned it on their behalf. Yeah. Look at all the mission stations, Northern Cape, Western Cape, around the country. The churches are big owners. And in the 1990s, the churches got together and made a statement about land, how they were going to contribute, and it hasn't happened. So I think that we're in a new moment where we need to be pressuring the private sector, the churches and so on. And in fact, there are initiatives, including an agricultural development agency that the private sector is proposing as a mechanism to bring in funding, private sector funding, to promote land reform. So I think that the past year has actually brought people who have been resisting land reform to the table to say, okay, let's be part of the solution. And I think that that's quite productive. In terms of eligibility, you were asking about what is black. All our legislation and policy sees black in an inclusive sense, not in an exclusive sense as in black African, but in an inclusive sense as in previously disadvantaged South Africans. So that's how it is. And thank you, Chair, for your comments about nation building. I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
We'll allow the Chair to wrap up.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you so much again for those comments. I think the starting point here is the question by the Honorable Chair Lulu Johnson in terms of what are we trying to do. I believe that today what we were trying to do was to bring in three committees that are specifically dealing with the issues of rural development, land reform, agriculture, forestry, as well as water, in terms of how we begin to think about these issues in a more integrated way. Because when we're dealing with the issues of land tenure as well as the issues of beneficiary selection, it is an area, these are areas that cut across mainly the committee members that are here as far as the work they are involved in or engaged in is concerned. So we're very, at least, helpful to just have an engagement. And we are not expecting to come up with the resolutions from such meetings, but the engagement is something that helps us. But what we would like to do is to continue to sort of even get submissions and test some of the ideas with you and give you our draft reports on very specific areas to look at. Secondly, the issue of I think, you know, your issue is very important, and it's the issue of hate and how actually we have been divided by the land question, and how we need to make sure that at the center of land reform is nation building is something that we believe as well as the land panel. And it's important that we get that reminder in making sure that even our report addresses these issues and how people, you know, from the workers' rights and some of these are specifically dealt with. So thanks for that reminder. One of the issues I'd like to raise in some of the questions that were asked is around the issue of market-based policies. One of the things we've had a presentation of this by the Velua General, and we are going to be raising some issues as far as the legislation that directs the work of the Velua General as it relates to the Constitution. And in a sense, in practice, that it's following a very clear market approach that, in a sense, is not necessarily centered on the fair and equitable basis that is being instructed by the Constitution. So it's things that we have raised and things that we're engaging with and things that we will be coming forward in terms of making sure we deal with them. The comprehensive strategy is what we are actually dealing with. This is the direction that we are going, and we are very happy to be dealing with that. And the baseline and records, what we're proposing actually is that immediately the issue of recording does not have to wait for the long-term process. There are people sitting now who need to be registered and recorded. So as we work, so we even proposing a learning and testing process which commences now, a whole drive and mobilization for people to go and record. So it's something that, in a sense, we will be proposing to government and would like the support across the board. Another area that in our engagement with the IMC, Interministerial Committee, was raised was the focus also to include the foreign land ownership. So we also dealing with those. I'm just touching on some of the important areas. Just to go back to MP, Honorable Member Kaula. Honorable Member, the issue of giving land to the people, as you highlighted it, is an issue that all of us are seized with. But the complexity is that there is a lot of work that has to be done in terms of making sure, you know, people are talking about lessons. There are lots of lessons that we have learned and need to continue to learn from the restitution process as far as returning land to people. And in a sense, we are learning that it's important to make sure that we assist communities. One of the reasons we're talking about land ombudsperson, mediation, and protector is because we've recognized the level of conflict that has resulted from dispossession, but also the fact that this lack of registration, it creates a lot of unnecessary conflict in terms of who owns, who's eligible within the various households. So it's important for us to work very closely with those specifically working with communities to make sure that we prepare ourselves as we are having to deal with the issue of land reform to make sure that communities are also amongst themselves talking to each other to try and minimize the level of conflict that we have seen with the restitution process. And it's some of the lessons that we are looking at. We are working with the Land Claims Commissioner to look specifically in terms of how do we manage and mitigate some of these risks. The other issue is in relation to, I mean, we talked about the youth and the prioritization of single-headed households and child-headed households, and as well as the plus. I want to just dwell on the water as my last one. And the issue of the question that panel member Professor Ruth raised about the class issue. Let me start with that. We always have very strong discussions around this issue. And the discussion is because in terms of land is a class issue. Land is a race issue. Land has issues around gender from patriarchy. Land has issues around spatial inequality. So the responsibility from our side is to try and come up with mechanisms in the allocation strategy that ensures that we address these issues. And the critical thing is that it is well and good, and we push for that, that we address issues of class. And actually the shift from the means test in the beginning was actually part of battling with this question. Because in the process of focusing on the means test and the poorest of the poor as beneficiaries, what was happening on the other side is that the inequalities at the top level of ownership, particularly by the commercial farmers and big farms, were being entrenched. So many years, 25 years later, we sit with only less than 5%, 1%, of the commercial producers from a food perspective being white commercial farmers. So it becomes important that when you address this issue, you understand that you need a mechanism that addresses inequalities and poverty, issues of the poorest of the poor not being marginalized, and particularly the elite in terms of the politically connected, not pushing things on the other side. But at the same time, don't be confused and think that, you know, we are saying the land on top, the big farms that are owned by commercial farmer and agribusiness owner is untouchable, in the sense that we will find ourselves so many years later with the similar picture of the majority of the most productive and bulk land still in the same hands. So when we are talking about shifts, we're dealing with the racial issue, but the instruments that we are talking about are basically in terms of where do you make sure that the most vulnerable are prioritized and supported adequately. So I just want everybody to sort of have a picture of the debate amongst ourselves on these issues and how we are tackling that. And lastly, the issue of water. We had asked, you know, some colleagues from the Department of Water Affairs to join us today to have that conversation on the water. I see they couldn't make it. But we are meeting with them. They've had presentations again to the panel. We are very concerned with the progress around the whole water transformation area, from the water rights. And part of the issue that we are concerned about is that it's a voluntary process in terms of people coming forward. So it's the picture that has been presented is exactly as honorable members were raising, that land gets transferred with no water. But the alignment, so what we are proposing now is the alignment in terms of the transfer of land with water and how we make sure, so some of the guidelines that we'll be putting forward are going to be directing us in that form. But it's going to be difficult, and part of it is revisiting the 1956 Water Act. So, as I conclude, honorable members, we're saying the work that we have presented has legislative implications. And if they talk to the water sector, they talk to the land redistribution, which we emphasize a lot upon, they talk to the land records, we're calling it as well land administration bill, I mean act that we are proposing, and we'll present a lot on that. There's also a push, I mean there was a question from Honorable Chair from Rural Development on the amendment on the CPA. We are basically looking at a very, you know, on the communal property bill, very refocused approach in handling that. But we are also calling for making EPIRA permanent and strengthening it. So these are some of the issues that we just wanted to touch upon, and the Water Act and the alignment with land reform, and we will be submitting more concrete proposals around these which might need your assistance before we finalize for tightening. Thank you so much for your... And one of the critical issues are the around institutional arrangements. We are very much aware that government at this point, we heard the President talking about the consolidation even at the State of the Nation address. We are raising some proposals and concerns around that, because it's not just about consolidating departments, but it's in terms of how do they address the issues. So the IGR, intergovernmental relations and interdepartment and all at various spheres are some of the things that we are bringing as part of the work that we focusing on. But Chair, let me thank honorable members for the opportunity on behalf of the team, and we hope that it's not the last time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair, through you, alongside all the panel processes, there are lots of other conversations happening in South African society about how to move land reform forward. One of them was a conference hosted by three universities, Western Cape, Rhodes and Fort Hare, 2 weeks ago, which looked at rural land redistribution and looked at three different models, a market-based model, a smallholder-focused model, and a radical approach. And there is a small policy brief if anyone is interested, which I'll leave at the front. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. We are closing. I'm not going to take any hands, honorable members. They've indicated that we are going to get the presentation. We're going to get the availing this document from the university. So the presentation that was presented to us here, we'll get the copies. Yes.
through our coordinators are here. I'm going to allow Honorable Johnson to close this meeting officially. He has never spoken as the chair would.
You're thirsty. There's plenty of water. No, thank you very much, members, panel, officials from the departments, and also from Parliament. The session was worth the while. Obviously, I would imagine here the committees that were invited here were not exhausted in terms of an expectation. On top of the head, I immediately think of public works, which is very critical. I don't know whether you've had your own special session with them. They hold quite a bulk of what is referred to as state properties. I guess it may just not be equally exhausting. I would imagine you might just have to go back again and think through as to who else really should matter when it comes to the issues that you are dealing with, not knowing also against your own timelines. But clearly this is a very emotional issue that we're dealing with. The land issue in South Africa is going to be with us for quite some time. At best, what we might wish to say is that let us avoid being emotional in dealing with these issues. It's not going to be easy, but it deals with the realities that we have been through, all of us collectively. So the issues that we are dealing with have such emotions. As a result, they shall be calling all the time for our own maturity as we deal with them. It's going to be an ongoing exercise on our part. People who are quite closest to this process, your Land Reform and the Rural Development Committee, and similarly with agriculture, for water and sanitation, we were to go through a similar exercise in really getting, you know, an input insofar as this whole expropriation of land without compensation issue is concerned. If you were to hear more stories on water, I'm sure we can be here for the whole day. It's equally a very thorny and emotional issue as well, I must say. As they always say, water is life. And it touches on the issues related to the ownership of that water resource itself. Just to give you an example, you're just in the middle of the drought in Cape Town last year. There are two white farmers in Grabo who would have said to the Cape Town municipality, here is water in the middle of drought. Just another example, out of no less than 5,000 dams that you have in South Africa, our own government can only account for no more than 400. This is just but one, you know, example, two examples. So in a nutshell, members, panelists, officials from the department and also from Parliament, thank you very much for having accorded us this opportunity.
Thank you, Chair. The meeting, the adjourned, lunch is served where we get the breakfast. Thank you very much.